Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
Oh, it's a sunny morning in Colorado, where I'm so passionate to be sitting here back in studio Art of Construction, but we are sitting in a different way today. We have a big sign I'm looking at welcoming Jonas DiCaprio into the Warrior Room. And so I'm so excited to be elevating the trades and hearing the stories today after a couple years of having to be creative through the Zoom calls. And here we are in person and back in the studio, and we're back with the Warriors, and we're going to make a whole focus on this thing. And welcoming John Stambaugh. If you didn't listen to the last episode, you get to hear the why between John and I, why we're doing this. But John, welcome. I'm so excited to have you as my co-host here. And dangle the carrot a little bit about your story with Jonas and begin with the end in mind about our upcoming Forge story.
Thanks, Devin. I'm stoked to be here. Yeah, Jonas and I have worked together over the years, and it's been really interesting. We've had lots of success and lots of challenges along the way, so it'll be great to hear Jonas's side of the story and mine as well as we blend those together.
Yeah, and what a perfect way, as I said, John, go get someone that you've really had successes and setbacks with and think hard on this, right? Like, this is coming up on 2 years to hit the record button. And I think back of this, and it was like, this was the carrot for you to say, well, this is really cool. I want to learn more about what's happening, right? And then I get the pleasure of pulling all this stuff together. And so why are we doing this, Tribe? It's Jonas grew up in the trades. Then he went to architecture school on the East Coast from growing up in Minnesota. But then I loved when we were really doing all the pre-interviews and talking about the frustrations and the challenges. And John, what are some of those in the pre-interview that he talked about?
Oh man, we talked about scheduling, we talked about weather, we talked about communication, you know, all these things that are continual challenges for all of us to deal with. And owning and operating a business on your own and really having to struggle through boots on the ground and running the business side of it as well. And I think so many of us warriors have that as such a challenge. And, you know, just fighting your way through it one step at a time.
Yeah, so our overarching is skilled labor from design to completion. The more we do it, the harder that seems to actually put it together. And that's why we wanted to bring Jonas in and talk through those things. And at the end of the day, we want to be building off of our initial episode. And we are not going to just be lip service on this podcast. Like, the message board has been blowing up. Warriors, leaders of the tribe, thank you for all the feedback and saying we're behind you on this thing. This has just got us that much more pumped up to just break through the next ceiling and investigate how we can have high-end builders deal with the challenges that pertaining to the skilled trades, right? Elevate and delegate the trades. Not enough people, enough of that. Let's get into real perspectives from a design professional. Anything else you want to tee it up here, John?
Man, I think you hit the nail on the head there. What's really powerful is we get to see that transition from the design to the field and all of those challenges. So Warriors and Tribe, I hope you're listening because this is going to be a good one.
All right, here we go. Jonas, what's your favorite beverage?
I'd have to say on the East Coast, we call it half and half. Out here, I hear most people calling it Arnold Palmer. Half iced tea, half lemonade.
Or a John Daly on the golf course.
That's right. There just that sweet spot.
What's your favorite place you've traveled?
Man, as an architect, I'd have to say Copenhagen. It's just the design mecca. And just to kind of see the infrastructure and the way that city is built is incredible.
Awesome. One story from that.
You know what? What's cool about Copenhagen is being out on your bike. The bike lanes, I think, have priority over automobiles. And it was just amazing being up at a stoplight. You're about 12 deep bicycles and you maybe got one car next to you. It's a pretty incredible city.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Well, what's your favorite hobby or interest outside of these construction silos we're going to break down today? We passionately call the art of construction.
For me, it's family at the moment. I got 2 young kids, so they're definitely the highest priority.
Awesome. Well, tell us your story that led you to being the design professional turned builder.
I born and raised in Minnesota. My parents were, they designed, built, and, you know, even went as far as they sold their own homes. So I kind of grew up in that atmosphere of like being around the trades, being babysat by the trades, being mentored by the trades. And a lot of those trades ended up being guys that I considered my uncles. You know, they were just really, really close people. So seeing the ups and downs of construction, went to Boston and really pursued architecture, thinking, you know, I can, I'm not going into construction, I'm going into architecture. It's not the same, you know. And then what I learned really quickly once I got out, started working in architecture firms, is just seeing how disconnected they were, how just architecture firms and architecture in general, just the lack of construction understanding. So in the, you know, sort of 08, 09, when that recession hit, I decided that, you know, now was the time. It was the time to break out and really start doing both exclusively. Every project that I'm designing, I'm building, and vice versa. And started a company myself. Eventually, you know, grow one employee, two employees. Soon, you know, before you know it, you got 24 employees. And it becomes a whole process onto itself of learning to manage, schedule, and, you know, run multiple jobs at a time. And, you know, that has ups and downs to it. And then, you know, now I think I've, in the last couple of years, I've really learned to dial it back and be really, really focused on the client and the quality component, and just finding much, much more satisfaction in that.
So here's the part where, as we've worked very hard on mixing all this stuff together, right? So I'm looking at Jonas and his shirt saying built X, built by design, and kind of like we've had all these play on words. And if at the end of the day, it's this chicken or the egg, the art or the construction, the build or the design. And I say that like I just, that's how it is. How screwed up is that, right? And so I think back of Matt McMullen, our executive producer of The Art of Construction, who he has been a lifelong learner of working with, being an architect that is working on executing his designs. And I think the art of construction has to realize how hard that is to actually transfer that enthusiasm or their crappy set of plans. And it becomes this or thing. And it doesn't have to be and or this, that. If we don't have the right communication, you do have to do that, right? And so that's where we're kind of guiding into. We're going to, you know, the riches and the niches. We have all these podcasts that are set up over the next 2 years. And I think through this to say, we're going to go really deep into how do you actually use a drone for your business, but then zoom out to say, how do you go to school to use that? Because I think that's really the key thing that I want to go down this journey today, is say, okay, why did you go to architect school? And one of our top rated podcasts is titled, Don't Go to Architecture School. And I say, why is that one of our top rated podcasts? And I think it's just because of the confusion of what should a warrior do, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's where we're going to go down that, to say, grew up in the industry, architect school, but working in architect firms and realizing the lack of construction understanding. Like, that is our key thing here, that we have to break down these silos. But then saying, it wasn't yesterday, it was the last recession that we still talk about, and here we are building on the next one of what's going to happen, right? And then say, for 10 years owning and operating this business, I'm super excited to listen to you guys get into the weeds of that stuff. So, John, let's dive in and get this baby going.
Sounds good, Jonas. We're talking about your projects and the things that you teed up for us, and you do a lot of high-end projects. How do you find the right fit for a team in those projects?
Starting for me in particular, I think it's just starting with the right client. It's a vested relationship, and it's typically one that doesn't, it's a long in duration. And if you do it right, those clients become your long-term friends, your long-term marketing, your long-term asset, as far as, you know, the future of your business. So starting with the right client and then building a team around that client. And if the project has specific, like, nuances and specialties to it, finding the right trades that have those experiences that match the client's project.
Absolutely. And, you know, all too many times we over the years have learned that we should have said no in certain instances. And boy, when you really put that into play, then you end up in projects that are the right fit. So yeah, it's one of those things that's difficult to iron out. But over time, back to the communication thing, I think if you're clear in your intentions and your road forward, then it makes it easier.
And John and I are going to keep challenging each other when we get to have leaders into the tribe that have lived both sides of the fence to say, this is for you warriors to elevate and say, if I put myself out of my black box and say, as the owner of this, to say, the first thing I'm hearing is things like, okay, build a team around this vested relationship. I raise my hand and say, we're all probably a little bit guilty of saying, how much do we communicate to the warrior about what type of customer this is to help them help you? What's your take on that?
I think that's a key thing. If the clients or the end user, let's say, if that's the homeowner, if that's the company owner, whatever it is, if they don't feel like they have a vested relationship directly all the way down to the smallest trade on the job, I feel like then the mutual respect isn't there. It just doesn't go, and the same thing, I think when trades get on a site, I think understanding whose home this is, treating it like you would treat your own home, bringing up to that level of respect.
Yeah. The question that was teed up in front of me was, how do I talk to Jonas about getting past the bottom dollar? And I say, well, the actual way of that is to elevate the trades. But to elevate the trades, we got to get on our own way and set up a system to where they feel elevated. And when they feel elevated, guess what's going to happen? Maybe we get over that lack of respect, right? So instead of just going right into this dollar conversation, maybe we should deepen the relationship conversation. What do you think is important about building relationships rather than look for the bottom dollar, if that's really what we're going to talk about, communicating and actually making these relationships work?
I'd say, it starts with that ability of connecting the end user with the trade and understanding that every little nuance in between is important. The communication between the contractor and the trades, the communication between the trades and the client and vice versa, that sort of circular line of communication just creates a much better product in the end. When the client understands the work that goes into these things, that how much these warriors are like, they've spent their careers building up this expertise, and to trust their expertise, not to question and not to just search for that, well, who can do it the fastest? Who can do it the cheapest? I think that the experience over price is way to go.
I think that's a great way to put it, because once you have that end user see the actual amount of effort and expertise that goes into that, then all of a sudden those barriers are broken and you see a light bulb go off in a lot of these end users / clients, and that also rebuilds the pride on the craftsman side, I think. So when we think about that and we look at the future of building and some of the things that we've seen in the past, what do you see that are some of the pros and cons in the future?
I think that I do see a lot of young guys in the field and the warriors in the field who are really dedicated to craft. And I think that's exciting. I think the younger guys who are excited about what they're doing and they're just going above and beyond, that part's exciting to me. Technology is exciting in that it's a tool. It's another tool in our tool bag. It's not the tool. It is a tool, and that we can, with technology, have better coordination and an overall better end product. I think the other pros is just going to be there are going to be lacks of resources. No matter how we manage ourselves, there will always be a lack of resources. And how are we creative to work around those lacks of resources? So, and then on the con side, I've growing up with parents who, built throughout booms, previous booms of the 80s and 90s, I see our booms and it just makes me really concerned about the shortcuts in construction.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We learn over time and time again, but then we seem to set ourselves up
over and over again.
And hopefully as we go through this, and like you say, the younger craftsmen coming up and really having some energy there, hopefully we don't smash their enthusiasm when something like a boom drops off and we're able to maintain that integrity through, rather than making the same old mistakes over and over again. And that's what excites me about people like you and how you run your business. It changes the way we look at the trades and how they relate to the business itself.
Yeah, so the overarching why of the Art of Construction podcast is for contractors and its affiliates. And we worked really hard on settling on the word affiliates to grow your business by connecting the right construction products and technology to the right handshakes. And you mentioned technology is cool, but it's a tool. It's not the everything. Just like eventually building informational model and digital twins 5 years, 10 years will become a common practice. But let's live in the now, right? Which will grow to the future. So I really want the warriors to say and talk through this on this journey to say, how do you see technology playing into the construction world? And what challenge do you see that we really have to overcome to make this not just be a video game, but be a real part of our handshake when we go through this evolution?
I'd say the strength is in with technology is the ability to coordinate. And I think that if that happens face to face, if that happens via email, if that happens via so many of these project management software sort of situations that contractors and architects and so on are involved in, I think the other part is the big bridge to get from is sort of the education versus experience in trades.
Yeah. Theory versus practice.
Exactly. Without a really institutionalized way of apprenticing in these trades and with the market demands of trades jumping from, say, okay, I've got 1 year of experience to then, demanding a pay of somebody who, say, got 5 to 10 years of experience and just this sort of wanting to leapfrog the day in and day out work. I just don't see there's any way around that.
Yeah, and I find that fascinating where I get the pleasure of having right now, we're onboarding a bunch of new people through both Art of Construction and my window and door company and seeing how the theory and the practice mix and match when they're just doing an onboarding to just onboard versus go do this. And I would really challenge the tribe to say, leaders, let's work on go do this. But we have to be of leaders to say what is the why and the what behind the bigger picture and give them that synopsis to go out and do that so that they understand what they're doing instead of just, I'll actually do it for real some other day. And I think that's the big thing that we have to figure out. And that's boiling down to getting over the F word, which is fear, and building trust. Because there's just not enough trust and there's too much fear going around.
Absolutely.
So, What else would you add on that? Let's get this video game stuff to life.
I think the other thing is just educating the end user and the client to see the value in the technology. I think, when technology comes at a cost and homeowners are concerned, clients in general are concerned about cost, I think educating them that the investment in the technology and the components that we're going to put into this are worth it, that the end product is better when it's involved.
Yeah, I have to tell a story. I think back when I first got in the business and I had graduated college, it was all theory of got a marketing degree. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And they said, Devin, there's 10 rail cars of trim out there. And your job is to bring 10 rail cars of trim in here that those need to go to 28 lumber yards. And first off, they just said trim like you should know what trim was. 4.5 years later, I am the master of 444 Anderson casing versus 327 and knowing everything about the blades nice because I was forced, but I'm wired a little bit different than some. They just told me that. I saw that as a fun challenge. Some people don't, right? And so that was a success for me, but it took me 4 years of beating my head against the wall to say, is that the smartest way for me to take over molding racks and lumber yards? And you think about it, how it's still actually done. Like you have to have a master's degree just to know the difference between the types of base and case. And then people spend a whole life trying to be able to, how do you actually match them up? And then when you learn it, it's just such a disgrace. So John, what's your take on when we look at these lessons learned?
Well, you hit the nail on the head there. You spent 4 years finding the ins and outs of trim. That's a whole nother level of education beyond the education you just got out of. And I think one of our challenges that we face is that it takes all this time to dial in your trade and to learn the skills on a day in, day out process. And what we really need to do is meld that technology into that training so that way it blends to the end user. And communicating that to the end user where they see the value, I think we're right on the cusp of this really becoming the practice moving forward, because as we've seen in our warriors, Devin, we see them moving more and more towards technology, even the ones that are you know, a little hesitant or starting to move that way, and it's really going to add value to the end user.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out how do we not have them take on too much, but not do what my training was that has to all get off those rail cars in the next 2 days. So go with that guy in the forklift and figure out how you're going to take it off that and getting it to 28 lumberyards in 4 states. Like, talk about a trial by fire, right? Like figuring that out. Maybe we should use technology for those things.
Right. Absolutely.
And I look at that like you'd think, you know, that was in 2006. You'd think here in 2021, it'd be drastically different about how base and case and take on too much and the tendencies to rush these decisions would be done very differently. I would now ask that baseboard and casing, when you're going back to the customer, when you have your trim carpenter, how is that done? Is it done very differently than 2006?
I wish it was more different, but I think it's, you know, I think there's a lot of those ingrained sort of processes that are still occurring that I think it's going to be breaking people out of those routines and getting our trades to think a bit differently, I think, on the technology side. And for the trades, and I understand the demands and the pressures and everything that are on them, it's like, why add one more thing? Why take on one more thing when I'm already, you know, I'm barely above water, you know? So,
and to me, that goes back to where we're teeing this up of we have to have a common thread. You have to have somebody that can add value so that the trim carpenter, the lead, can be teaching someone how to do a cope and how to actually, if it's a historic, which correct me if I'm wrong, you do those, how do you find a place that has the right knives to match up that three-step baseboard or that crown that is, you look at that and it's, that's what I love about this, but that's what also drives me crazy is how do we build by design? And that's what we're really going to continue to talk about and go down these veins and talk through those different things, right? So, and then we're going to get to our Forge story. But first, I just want to kind of go back and say, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, you were kind of new at the last recession. Here we are at the pinnacle again, right? And owning and operating, I think you said you were in the double-digit employees at one time.
Correct.
And then now you've kind of scaled back.
Yep.
If you did it all over again, what would you do different?
Yeah, you know, I think the failures are part of the lessons learned, and I don't think I would do anything different. I think I would not be where I am now, and I would not understand what I understand now if I hadn't had challenges and failures. And I think a lot of those come from just taking on too much. And I think in our current situation with the economy and everything running the way that it is, It's easy to do. It's easy to overcommit yourself. It's, you know, there's a tendency to say, you know, make hay while the sun shines. Like, let's do all these projects. This is a great project. These are great clients. You can always make rationalized decisions to take on too much. But there's the price that you pay for that is that there's this something has to give. It's the quality. It's the, you know, the design intent. Something is going to give when you take on too much.
You should be proud for that answer, right? Because you learn by doing, right? And that's what this podcast is all about, to say, warriors, it's okay. We're all going to screw up, right? And your failures is what moves forward. And that's why we're so passionate about this Forge story, to get in and talk through that, to manage the two things we don't have enough of. And that's time and money. And you have to take a little bit of time to reflect, because mental health and all these things are a real thing out there, right? We already don't have enough of us. We gotta have this band of brothers to take care of this, to break through that ceiling together. And that's what this is for. So there's a whole journey we're going to go on about managing those things to figure that stuff out, to say, you know, I raise my hand and say, I've grown too fast, but boy, did we learn a lot, right? And that's really, if you want to be a leader, that's what it means. It means successes and setbacks, but you're only as good as your tribe at the end of the day, right? So it's finding that those groups together. So here's the part that I am so excited for, working, you know, going on 6 years of doing this podcast. And when I started this podcast, it was a long journey to say, like, I am so excited to bring people into this platform that we built. That the last one, there's all these people saying, Devin, I'm so glad you did that. And I'm like, what a reward to say, my job now is to tee this up and hear Ford story after Ford story. So if you are a contractor like Jonas that wants to be part of this, what a great way to market the tribe and give back to the tribe that you've given so much to, Jonas. So I challenge you, the other Jonases out there, after you go through this Ford story, but this is where it's not scripted or real. We did a lot of planning and a lot of thinking about really getting a good message out there. But the Ford story is that fireside chat that comes across to say, okay, what is that one thing, as we talk about on the big podcast, what is that one thing to grow your business? And that undertone is build better buildings. The only way you're going to do that is with the field to the office and the warriors. So, John, here you go. I'm turning it over to you to talk through and ask some more questions, but get into this Ford story. We're all engaged and we're all at the edge of our seat for this conversation.
Awesome. Thanks, Devin. I appreciate it. And sure appreciate you, Jonas, for being here. One of the things that we talk about our failures, and we talk about that at length at many different ways. But, you know, what we do when we fail is we're paying tuition because we're learning as we go. And I think the Ford story today is a pretty prime example of that. So Jonas and I worked together on a Rally Street project, and it involved a pop top of a really old home. And it was just challenging right out of the gate all the way through. And so one of the things that sticks out to me in our mind as we look at this is that, man, what a tough project that was.
Like, agreed.
I lost the rest of my hair on that project, I think. And some of the things that I come up with when I think about that project is weather and communication and design and engineering issues and having to find ways to sort all this out in the midst of a pandemic. And so I look at you and I say, what would you say? What were some of the challenges that you saw that A, stressed our relationship, and then B, we overcame at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think, for me on the general contracting side and both being the architect and contractor there, I think was the communication and relaying and getting the right information go flowing between the engineering and the guys who were actually out there swinging hammers. And for us, with tearing apart an 1897, brick home that was never meant to have a second story on it, we were just basically starting from a point where we needed to rethink every single part of that house. And ultimately, the warriors in the field are the guys that figured it out. They were the guys that put their heads together. We worked on site with the engineer. And through many, many, many challenging conversations, we got it to work. And the ultimate component of that is the end product is incredible. But the ups and downs and all of the components in between, the things you can't control, weather, like you mentioned, the pandemic, all of a sudden we're having to spread all the subcontractor components out. People can't work in certain parts of the home at the same time as other trades, and just being in all of those sort of those unknowns and the uncharted territory.
Yeah, I tell you, it was a roller coaster of a job, and man, the guys in the field were just sweating it. They, challenge after challenge, but they just muscled through and got it done. And one of the things that makes me so proud about this project is We never stepped off and quit. We never gave up on each other as contractors and as GCs and the whole chain. And ultimately, at the end of the day, what won that battle, I believe, truly was coming together with solid communication and really punching through and holding everybody accountable. And that, to me, is really tough, because this is one of those projects where, and I know we've all been there, warriors, you've been on a project and your gut tells you, man, I'm not sure if I should do this one. And then you get into it knee deep and you're like, oh man, I was right. Oh man, I was right. And then you're
so that's where I want to stop you guys. And like, let's peel back that onion a little bit. Because when I hear the word pop top, we're in Denver in this historic, I think there's this miscommunication on the front end of, if I'm just going to pop the top, I take the roof off, put new bedrooms on there, put a ceiling back on there, and I do this in a couple months, and I can spend $50,000 instead of $500,000 to build a new house. And the reality is, we have to paint the picture of you're actually doing this because you want to keep the character and charm of this and try to do the right thing instead of tear the whole thing down and start back over. And we try to cut out these whole important things like the structurals, the office, the architecture. A lot of those just kind of get kind of pushed to the side and then just figure it out on the job site. That's what I'm hearing may have happened. And I raise my hand and say, I've done multiple pop tops. And I raised my hand in the past until I really understood it. It was Warriors, thank God I have you to do this because everyone else is just passing something over to you. That's kind of started, but it's not finished. But this world of computational design and industrialized construction, you can't fake it till you make it. Am I understanding that correctly?
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the things where you're looking at it and it comes at you and you're like, okay, this seems doable. And then you get boots on the ground and then you get the tool belts out. And you're like, hold on a minute. Now we need to get really into this, get that design plugged in and actually get the engineer out and say, okay, this is how we're going to get it done. And that way everybody's on the same page. What would you add to that?
I think it's a lot of times engineers, they do their very best. They make a whole list of assumptions and it's the best that they can do until really you get into the meat of it and you tear the house apart and you actually see what exists. Oh, that foundation only goes 18 inches below grade. This entire house has been sitting on three courses of brick, you know, below grade. And then going, okay, now how do we solve the problem? How do we still keep the intent of the design? How do we move this project forward without just quadrupling costs? And it's problem solving and problem solving and problem solving.
And these are the blow-ups. You start adding, what, 10 helical piers at $5,000 each? No, that's not going to work. And we've already started doing this. So what you get into these punt situations, and that's where the art of construction becomes not so fun. But then the Warriors get it done. But I think about these critical moments. We talk about the engineer. They do the best they can. You tear up the wall. But what do we put on that front end relationship building contract to say, this is this until we open up the wall? And who actually communicates that? And who meets with the decision makers, the inspector? And that's the part where the Warriors are sitting back saying, how is John and Jonas going to pull this one off?
Yeah.
I think we should maybe think about that, of maybe fight back a little bit more. And this is the part where I say I'm a micro-influencer and most of the time a disruptor. I'm going to fight for the people that don't have a voice when the inspector and the briefcase and this shows up. Like, who is the lead carpenter?
Right. Absolutely. Who is the lead carpenter and are they really going to be able to get this done?
I think there's a fork in the road there where it can become adversarial or it can become like, let's all get our heads together and let's do this. And I think when you have the right team, when you have even the guys who are down at the lowest level of, say, like, you know, just beginning their careers, and they're thinking differently too. They're thinking, okay, I know enough to think about how to problem solve my way through this, even if it's just a minor detail. If you have senior sort of structural engineers who are willing to come to the site, stand with the lead carpenter and listen, not dictate, but listen to the challenges and then come up with a solution together. I think that really is where we succeeded in that specific.
Absolutely. We all want to be heard, but we struggle to get people to listen sometimes, listen. Right? And that's the key thing here of Tribe. When listen and speak, listen more, talk less, right? And figure that out to where we call them our tailgate talks, right? Who should be talking at how and when at the tailgate talks. And this is the part I want you to think about that. The people that are doing all the talking sometimes, like me raising my hand, I'm going to keep challenging myself to talk less and sit back and elevate others to talk more, that I think they have a lot of cool stuff to say. I just don't know if we're putting them in the right platform to be able to mix and match this stuff together. So when, it's not if, it's when the problems occur and that fork comes, it doesn't become a pointing of the finger. It becomes a circle, a tribe, all the things we're building here. Is that kind of how, like, how did you guys meet when the shit hit the fan? Because I'm assuming when I talk about helical piers, foundation, I'm assuming those conversations came in that you don't know about that stuff until you have to know about that stuff. And now you get to remodel the basement bathroom almost every time on these pop tops that wasn't part of the budget to get out of the. Did that happen on this
Absolutely.
One?
Absolutely. We had we tore up the floor and got in there and realized immediately that we had a lot of structural work to do before we could even begin to go up with it. So when the guys started looking at it, they're like, "Oh, we need help. We need help." And so luckily, Jonas is on site all the time. And this is something that I wanted to bring up about Jonas is warriors out there, you know, you hear the word architect, but that doesn't begin to light up how much grit this man has. He's out there sweeping floors, swinging hammers, doing demo, hauling lumber. You know, he's out there getting it done. And that's one of the reasons I thought it was so cool to have him on the show, because he's seen both sides of it at extreme levels. And when it comes to this particular project, we had both been through enough to know that if you get real excited, you're going to stand in your own way. And so once we peeled that onion back and saw it and we're like, oh no, I could see the stress in Jonas's face, because I knew that he probably had some money in there for structural shore ups, but we had large challenges on our hands. You want to illuminate that a little bit?
Yeah. And
I want to just chime in there to say that the key thing you said of all this stuff is he got the broom out and helped be part of the band of brothers. Instead of just come in and dictate, you're leading with the team. And that's something that is so key as leaders nowadays, especially the next people coming up. They, you know, they'll do it if you do it, and they're used to computer first, broom second.
Totally.
So we have to help with that, right?
100%. Yeah.
I think from my standpoint, I consider it as just like, that's my service. I want to make sure that my trades feel like their work environment is an environment that like everyone's contributing. Like they, when I'm there and I'm cleaning and I'm hustling and I'm making things happen, I feel like that's infectious. Like I
totally.
See it throughout
100%.
All of every single guy. And I think the more to, and I'll say this to the warriors, is just, you know, it's a tendency to put the earphones on, put the earbuds in and just go to work and tune out. Don't pay attention to what's going on around you. You got the things you need
to do.
And
there's a time you got to do that when the Art of Construction comes live, but not all day.
Correct. But I think, you know, listening, just listening, man, listen to those other trades on the site, listen to what the conversation is between the, you know, the architect and the homeowner, or the homeowner and the contractor. Listen to all those conversations and understand all the background of what's going on around you. Cause I mean, the things that I just learned from the guys, they're painting on the job site, or the plumbers or the electricians. It's like, it's invaluable stuff. So back to what John was saying about this particular project, I think my mind starts to split in a bunch of different directions. I think about all of the time that's gone into the design and all of the commitments that have been made to the client, to the end user, and thinking about each and every component, trying to bring it up to the same level. So not just glazing over a part like, okay, well, we just realized this entire floor was built by five different additions, all at different levels. And we really can't get a level second floor brand new house unless we start at the very bottom and we start from ground zero and work our way up. And that's just, you know, the tendency, I think, to work against a budget would just be like, cover it over, let's do the best we can with it, and let's move on. And that backfires every
single
time.
That's the easy thing right now.
Right.
Right. And that's where that cheaper versus the right thing to do is we see it a lot, and man, it just turns my stomach. And to be a part of a project where doing the right thing is at the forefront was really nice. You know, granted, it was hard to accomplish, but it was worth every bit of sweat.
All right, here's one that I didn't tell either of them about that they get to get challenged on. Jonas, what's one thing on the project that really piss you off about with John? If think about it, there's got to, and if you can't answer that, then you guys didn't overcome objection. And I sounds like you overcome objection, and part of that is getting pissed off, checking yourself and checking each other. And that's what we're going to help each other with here.
You know, I think for John and I, the biggest challenge that we hit, and the part where I think we got a little testy with each other, is just setting the right levels of expectation. I think what would happen is, I think John was very optimistic about his guys' abilities and intents, but there are just things that hold projects up. It's just challenges all across the board. And then so when information is communicated to the architect, the contractor, I think most trades know that that communication then goes directly to the homeowner or client. So when that doesn't get followed through, it then comes back to me to say, why didn't this happen when it was supposed to? Well, John told me this was going to happen by Friday. And now here we are Wednesday of the following weekend. It still isn't done. So I think that's where
I love that answer.
Yeah, that's where we got in each other.
And that's where definitely. A leader of the tribe can be guilty of sticking up too much sometimes, to where warriors that work for John hear what we're saying here. Is he's just going to keep sticking up. But then it's John's job to make sure here's the expectation I set. And this is the elevate and delegate that we're all about and all working together. Am I understanding that right?
I think so. But here's what I'll say to John's credit is that his guys are just optimistic, hardworking guys, right? So I had to think back even to them thinking that they really believed they would have that done by Friday. And they saw the clients coming every day. They saw their excitement and they really wanted to get it done for them. It wasn't a lack of commitment. It was just the physical constraints of not being able to do everything you want to do.
So the key takeaway I'm hearing is the power of yes, but. And our core value changed over and over. Like, as you get your tribe to tick, as you leaders listening, talking about or elevating our trades, is the core values are so real, but you got to work on them every day and you got to refine them. And so for us, it was always get shit done, GSD, 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 until we almost ran the business into the ground. And then Absolutely. Matt McMullen, our executive director, come in and said, Devin, I love that you guys GSD every day, but let's first do a little T. Because we have to thoughtfully get shit done. And then at the end of the day, when you really dial that in, there's this fancy word that we're all scared to say as warriors. Because we are a get shit done. We're optimistic we're going to make it happen. It's not very long. We don't want to say it, but there's this word, if you say it at the right time to set expectations, you may lose a few battles, but you will win the war. If you learn how to say this word at the right time, at the right place, the right tailgate talks. Do you guys know what that word is?
No.
No.
No. It's got to be no.
Seven times the first time. No.
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 No. No. I can't do that. But this is why.
Here's why.
And what we're going to do is this. And I've went through so much coaching on all of these things and all the psychology of this. Because at the end of the day, this pop top, this Forge story we're talking about is all emotion.
Oh, absolutely.
At the end of the day, they're going to get it done. It's a matter of how much over budget and how much extra they're going to have to spend. And the longer you say yes, 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 blah, 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 shit, 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 shit. No. And that's what we have to help each other with.
Absolutely. You're right on the money.
So where did Jonas piss you off when he said, I'm meeting with the Friday homeowners Friday and everything's going to be done?
I think
I'm joking. Because that's never happened, right?
No.
Because John told me it would be done.
Because I told him it would be done. I think a lot of the challenges for me on that project came up, and yeah, we're getting it done. We're out there slinging hammers. We're overcoming challenges, but we're not gaining time on our schedule based on all of the changes that are having to go. And we'd get up on the second floor.
Oh, they'd make changes and then still want it done at the same time?
Weird. Construction never happens that way.
Especially design build.
We'd get up, on second floor and then realize we had to go back to the first floor to tie something together and add another structural component, whatever. And I think setting the expectations, I appreciate Jonas saying that, because we definitely wanted to get it done and we felt like we could get it done and we had buy-in from the warriors and then it would just unravel. And I didn't do a good enough job communicating the unraveling so that Jonas could protect himself and the project and I could protect our warriors. And I should have been saying no more often. We're actually going
to
do it.
And more often is key, though. This is where I want to give a shout out to Grant Dunn. And he's been one of my superstars from the beginning, his framer, his whole career. And he'll listen and let, this is where, you know, he'll let the Tasmanian Devin go, 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 and listen, 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 until this is something that's going to that's going to hold safety, moving things down, or a way that, and these are people, when you talk about lead carpenters, that are so valuable, that are going to help the three of us when we're running this project and that project and meeting this deadline and this expectation. That's the power of focus and the power of saying no at the right time. And we are going to continue to bring in, and one of my goals, John, is we're going to get Grant to come in here, and we're going to get him because he is Agreed. Not that type of guy, right? So I'm going to be challenging people I know that would say, I would never do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the people that say they'll never do this are going to ask them, add the most value. So Jonas, I challenge you to come back on here to say, what's one of the, someone to think about, not today, but just as we're getting this, the Forge stories and the Warrior stories going, where can we add the most value? And that's just keep elevating and delegating the stories that are, it's that question or that time that you didn't speak up that caused the most problems. And that's the Forge story we're going to just keep bringing into this. So what was that thing that caused the biggest problem on this pop top, John?
For me, communication, 100%.
So that's too fluffy. What's one meeting, one thing to get down in the weeds to say, if we would have done this, we would have saved that. And my gut is listening, not knowing anything about the story, is something about, we always talk about begin with the end in mind. If I heard a structural line item that we went, we got to help Jonas here because there's all these line items. How do we move this around? Because the solve is this and this all go way up, right?
Yeah.
It is what it is. And that's the part we all have to have people behind us to protect us.
For sure. So the communication part that I'm referring to, and thanks for pointing that out, Devin, because that was not nearly pointed enough. But what really should have happened on our side, on my side of the fence, was one, not building a fence by saying, okay, we have all these structural issues. Let's pump the brakes for a second. Let's take a real look at how long this is actually going to take, and let's really build a system around what we need to do to make sure that we're doing it right, and what that looks like on a realistic time frame to get that done. I didn't stop and really set the expectations for Jonas to then run with and say, okay, homeowners, here's what we're actually looking at. And if we had done that, we could have built in some fluff. We had some weather fluff in the schedule and stuff like that we could work with, but it wasn't nearly enough, and it wasn't in a fashion that made a lot of sense. It wasn't clear, and it left Jonas kind of out there in the wind.
I think we ended up being reactive instead of proactive, and which, if like John's saying, if we had pumped the brakes, we had reconvened with the engineer, and we had just set the expectation with the homeowner, we really could have, that 2 weeks would have been invaluable. That would have ended up saving us a month of time.
Absolutely. 100%.
That's gold. Thank you so much for sharing that story. So as we ask on every podcast, what is your crystal ball for connecting the right technology to handshakes with the future in construction?
You know, man, I hate to just keep beating the dead horse here, but the communication part, I think it's for people like all of us, like the Warriors, to find the way of how can we bridge that gap? So how can we bridge, you know, technology, all the parts and pieces that we want to put into these projects with actually building the relationships one-on-one with each of us. So each trade with the contractors, each trade with themselves in and of themselves. I think that, you know, when I see on my job sites, when I see electricians and plumbers and HVAC guys all standing around talking with each other, explaining why, how, when, where, what they're doing, and then I just see it go and being executed, I love that part of construction.
Agreed. It's just so cool to watch it when it works and it just flows like that. It means you got a great team, and I think that technology is going to be a huge player in this in the future.
I hope so.
Awesome. Well, close it out. What is that one thing for contractors and our affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
I think right now in the market that we are in, slow down, focus on who you are actually working for. Like, think about the end users, think about the clients, think about the homeowners. You know, I'm the contractor. Trades, you know, I think at sometimes will feel like they have a level of responsibility to me, but I can just continue to try to impart on them that their responsibility is to the client, is to the end user, just as much as it is to me. And then just delivering above and beyond expectation. And that doesn't have to be like putting yourself out there and you know, driving your business into the ground. It's just about doing that little bit extra to just sort of elevate everybody's who works around you sees that and does the, you know, typically follow suit.
Awesome. Well, John, perfect way. Jonas, the perfect person. We'll make sure we stay in touch with Jonas and all the fun stuff we got going here to keep elevating the trades. Well done. Warriors, keep giving us the feedback. Who's going to step up with us here and tell their sport story? And as you heard, I'm going to keep challenging us all, right? Because the only way around this thing to build better buildings, straight through it with Through the Warriors, right? Thank you so much for coming and sharing us your story.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jonas. It was a blast.